feel like I'm going to kick that over. My name is Marlon, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 12, 2017. I have a sponsor. I sponsor others, and this is my home group. So, what I was thinking about on the way here, I was just thinking about, like, how crazy it is, the relationships. Like, I can relate a lot. Like, thanks for your story, Alex. He's actually helped me a couple times since he's moved here. I'm really glad that I can call him a friend. Because, like, I think about all the relationships that I had when I was, like, using and drinking and when I wasn't in the program. And then I think about my relationships now. You know, like, Alex mentioned it. Like, I wouldn't think to call somebody and, like, ask them how they're doing or, like, call them to run, like, something that's going on in my head by them. I wouldn't think to, like, the only reason I'd call anybody is if I needed something from them. That was it. Or, like, if I thought that they could, like, get me in a position to where I could get what I wanted in a manipulative way. But yeah, so the beginning of it, I was born in New Jersey. My parents are great. They did everything they could with the tools that they had. And growing up was different for me. None of these things that I'm gonna mention here make me, in my opinion, an alcoholic. I believe I was born with this disease. But when I was really young, my dad was actually in the process of going through, like, jail and rehab. So I was raised mostly by, like, my granddad, who then died when I was about 8 years old. And that was, like, the first time I was really affected by anything. That was, like, the first time I had, like, this weird, like, gut-wrenching, emotional kind of feeling that I can remember. But, like, all growing up, I was, like, the first grandchild, so I was, like, praised as, like, the only one, and I was, like, the first of everything. You know, they were, like, you're so smart, you're gonna do great things. Like, you're gonna go on to rule the world. All these things, like, pumping up my head. I'm, like, yeah, absolutely. And I carry that through today. I'm, like, just, I always hear people say it in the rooms, like, an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, because what goes on in my head and what I say out loud is completely different. And, like, people in here know that. Absolutely. But yeah, so, like, moving on, my first drink, when I was about, like, 8 or 9 years old, it was at my uncle and aunt's wedding. They thought it'd be really funny to see me get drunk. I drank a bunch of rum punch. I beat my uncle in pool. I called him a pussy. It was a great night. My uncle still tells that story to this day whenever he introduces me to anybody, which is extremely embarrassing. I remember going up there, and I was out with a client, and my uncle met me for lunch, and he was like, yeah, like, did Marlon ever tell you, like, about my wedding? And I'm like, why are you telling him this story? Like, this is not okay. But, like, he gets to do that. Like, this is his thing, I guess. But moving on. So, at 11, drugs are a huge part of my story. They were more accessible to me. And one thing I do want to mention is I got sober at 18. It is totally possible. I've seen somebody who was, like, 85 get sober and, like, stay sober for an extended period of time. So, like, it doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are, you can, like, still stay sober. The program works for as long as you work it. Doesn't matter age, doesn't matter race, doesn't matter gender. None of it doesn't discriminate in that way. But yeah, so I started smoking weed, and I was a really, like, lazy kid, but I was, like, really ambitious, you know? I was entrepreneurial, so I was like, oh, I don't have to do chores, like, because my dad would say he'd pay me for chores and all that stuff, and I'm like, nah, that's too much work. So I just started selling, like, weed to my friends, you know? And then a traumatic experience happened that I won't mention, and I started, like, taking Ambien to, like, try and go to sleep. But I found out that if you take Ambien and, like, stay up, like, it's great. It's amazing. So, yeah. I did that for a little while. And there's like, a bunch of little stories, right? Like, one that I was just thinking about is, like, the first time that I took acid, I was at my friend's house, and we were all drinking way too much. And I surrounded myself with people that did the same things that I did, right? Like, all my childhood friends that, like, have gone off to college now and are, like, normal kids, like, they were, like, a part of my life, but I wouldn't hang out with them anymore. Like, it got to a certain point where they just couldn't keep up. Like, I remember being like, yeah, let's, like, drink and, like, go do all this stuff. And they're like, no, like, we have homework. And I'm like, homework? Like, what do you mean? And so That continued, and then I moved down here, and then the first time I took acid, because when I moved down here, I surrounded myself with the same people, started doing the same things. Like, I've heard this, it's the same story. Like Alex said, my story is not unique at all. And so I moved down here, surrounded myself with the same people. We were sitting in my buddy's house, drinking, smoking, and I took acid. And then we decide that we're going to drive somewhere, because the one guy who didn't take acid's like, yeah, I'm going to drive us to go, like, do something. I don't even remember what it was for. And we're smoking weed in the car. You know, it's like 2 a.m. Who else is out but cops? You know, like, we're just real smart. And we get pulled over, and we're, like, dumping weed out the car door, like, have it cracked open. You know, I'm, like, tripping on acid, and I'm, like, I start, like, seeing all these, like, weird things. My brain starts functioning on a crazy level, and I'm, like, seeing red. And then, so the cops obviously pull us over. They put us in handcuffs on the curb, and I'm like 15 or 16, I don't remember. And that was like my first experience with acid, was getting arrested. And then I remember my mom coming to pick me up to bail me out of that one. It was like 2 a.m. I called her, I blow up her phone. They're like, you're going to jail if she doesn't come pick you up. I'm obviously like, my phone is continually dialing that number. So she comes, bails me out, and I'm like sitting in my room staring at the ceiling, high on acid. I'm like, oh, I cannot wait to do this again. This was amazing. And like, at the same time, like, my heart is beating through my chest. I can't sleep. It was just insanity. And so it just continually like increased. I started like taking pills. I started doing it every day. I'd wake up in the morning, and I really did have some contentment to stop. I was dating this girl at the time, and she's like, Marlon, you need to stop taking pills. And she was crazy too. Insane. And there's a lot of stories that go along with that that I won't get into, but like, I remember she didn't have a license, and I was at my buddy's house, and we were taking pills, and I was like putting it on my Snapchat story like a genius, because I thought I was cool or something like that. And I'm like, hey, I need to go like get more drugs. And then she comes and picks me up. And she's drunk, doesn't have a license, but has a car. I then decide, the girl tells me that she doesn't want me to take pills, but I decide to take pills sitting right next to her. She then drives like 70 miles per hour while she's screaming at me, hitting me in the driver's seat, crashes into another car. And I still, to this day, don't know how this is possible, but she gets out scot-free, like nothing happened, like just insurance, the cops were there. It was a whole thing. She's drunk, I'm high on pills, I do not know how we got away with that. But then like I start getting her to take pills with me. It was great time. And I do it, it's just like the same story over and over again. Like the last like drunkalogue story that I'll share is this is the one that really just puts the nail in the coffin for me, right? I went to a party with like 6 beers, and I was like, yeah, this is all I'm gonna have tonight. And I walk into the party, I start drinking. One of my buddies walks in with like a handle of Fireball, and he's like, hey Marlon, you wanna do a shot? We have no cups at the party yet. So I get down on my knees, and he starts dumping Fireball down my throat. Like, and I'm like, that's disgusting. Like, why would I do that? It hurt, but I loved it. And by the end of the night, like, I ended up buying other drugs and like going to the beach, and one of my friends had to drag me out of the ocean because I was gonna drown. And like, that's my alcoholism. That's literally my alcoholism summed up. And like the end of it was I was selling drugs. I got kicked out of my parents' house because I fought my dad. I got charged with domestic battery. I was still seeing the same girl. Not charged, sorry. I got arrested for domestic battery. And I got kicked out. I was living at the place where I sold drugs out of and sleeping on the floor. And then I got arrested again for a bunch of different charges. It's inconsequential. When I came in the rooms, I used to brag about it. I was like, yeah, I got arrested for all these charges, like all this stuff. But like, I really stole a golf cart. I like had barely any weed on me. I was trespassing, and like they charged me with the absolute max. They didn't charge me. They arrested me for the absolute maximum. And I was like, yeah, I'm so cool. You know, I always thought I was so cool. Today, like, I realized that's just not cool. You know, like, why would I do that? But yeah, so it came down to it. I'm sleeping on the floor of this place that I used to sell drugs out of. I'm paying my rent in pills, quote unquote. And I wake up in the morning, and there's cat hair in my nose, and I have to go in the bathroom every single morning and clean out the cataract. I didn't even have a pillow. Like, all I had was, like, this little, like, blanket. I remember it very vividly. Because, like, I couldn't even get as high as I wanted to. Like, there was a point where, like, I had all of everything, and then it just went away so quickly, right? It went away so fast. And I just wanted to get back to that place. And I'm like, I would always come up with these ideas because I was entrepreneurial. I'm like, all right, I can rob this guy and get this, and then I'll make it. I'll get back to where I was, and I'll get as high as I need to be. I'll get as drunk as I need to be, and everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. It never was. I never got there. I could, like, never get as much as I needed to feel okay, because I just wasn't. So what it came down to is I got put in this diversion program by the grace of my parents, my loving parents. Oh, and I need to tell this story, too. I thought about this on the way here. I walked in, before I got kicked out, I walked into my parents' house, and I'm standing at the kitchen counter, like, high out of my mind. I'm eating granola, and my mom looks at me and she just starts, like, tearing up, and my dad walks up and he goes, "Marlon, you know we have a life insurance policy out on you." And I just look at him, I'm like, "Okay." And he's like, "Because we know you're gonna die." And my mom starts bawling her eyes out, and I'm just sitting there like, I really hope they get paid. Like, I kind of want to die, you know? Like, I did not want to live at all. And I might have given off this energy when I was, like, talking to other people that, like, I wanted to live, but I didn't want to live at all. Every day I'd wake up in the morning and, like, ask, I wouldn't ask God, but I'd just be like, why the F am I alive? Like, why am I alive? Because I just, in my opinion, didn't think I deserved to be alive. Like, I was not contributing to society. But so, by the grace of my parents, I got put in the diversion program, and I didn't do anything in there at all. It was like, I did that, and, like, everything that I got arrested for would have been dropped, and, like, I could just go about my life. I had, like, really good grades in school, even though I skipped, like, insane amounts of school. And my guidance counselor applied to colleges for me. She told me to write essays, and, like, I didn't do any of that. Again, because I was entrepreneurial, I'm like, I don't need them. I'm going to make it. All I got to do is just do these things. I got a plan. The plan never worked, as I said. But yeah, so I didn't do any of those things. It ended up being that I had to go to rehab, or I was going to get charged with all these things. I'd have to go to court. And so my first rehab, I was like, okay, I'll go. I go to detox before, and I tell them I'm taking, like, insane amounts of pills. So while I'm in there, I'm just a zombie. I'm just walking around, like, this is, like, amazing. I'm just walking around. I snuck my phone in. Like, all the things you're not supposed to do when you go to detox. And, yeah, that was, and then I got kicked out, I think 2 days in. And then my mom's like, "Don't leave, I'm coming to pick you up." My buddy's already there picking me up, and we go pawn some stuff to go get more drugs. And that was it. And then I'm still sleeping at the place. My parents are like, "Come over, you can eat dinner with us, and we'll just have a conversation." So everything aligns perfectly in this situation for me to get sober, right? Like, I'm like, all right, I haven't eaten. The only thing I was eating was, like, 7-Eleven, like, hot dogs and those, you know, those, like, taquito things and, like, strawberry milk. And that's all I'm eating. That's all I'm eating. Like, I haven't had, like, a real meal in, like, I don't even know how long. And so I go there. I knock on my parents' door. It's like 10 p.m. Of course, my phone is dead, and my buddy had left. And I see my dad walking up the stairs, and he just looks down at me and shakes his head. So I'm like, all right, so where am I going to sleep now, you know? And so I end up trying to sleep out back. That doesn't work. I sleep in the back of my dad's car. I wake up to him opening the door, and he's like, "Go pack your stuff. You're going to rehab." So I go to rehab. I stay in rehab for 28 days. I almost get kicked out, like, 8 times. Like the fact that I'm sober today just still blows my mind. Like, even, like, telling my story, I'm like, how am I still sober? And the reason is because, like, all I've done continuously is have some shred of willingness and, like, continue to be honest when I need to be. And, like, I haven't even been completely honest, you know what I mean? Like, I lied on my first 2/4 steps. And, like, and then that was, like, big for me. Like, and there was on the second time that I did, I remember doing my 4th step, and I had a car at this point. I had this old Ford Explorer that I paid $500 for. And I was driving across the bridge to my parents' house on their good graces of them letting me stay with me, even though they, like, I don't even remember what the reason was. And I'm driving over there to spend the night. And I'm like, somebody, like, there was no car radio in the car, so I'm holding my phone to my ear, and Post Malone is playing, and I'm, because I just can't get out of my head. And then my sponsor at the time's roommate calls me, and he's like, hey, do you know where your sponsor is? And I'm like, no, but I need to tell you something. And then I just, all of it comes out. You know, I'm like, I was lying on my fourth step. Like, I just can't do this. Like, I can't do it. And he's like, all right, well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to your parents' house, and then tomorrow you're going to come back here, and we're going to figure this out. And I remember sitting in my parents' house, and I'm, like, in my old room, and my parents drink. And I'm, like, in my old room. I'm just staring at the ceiling. I can't sleep because I'm just, like, so sick, just absolutely sick. And there's a – I can visualize this bottle of alcohol that's sitting on their counter. And I immediately, like, run out of the house because I know I'm going to drink. And I go to the beach, and I start crying. Like, I'm bawling my eyes out. And I'm staring at the sky, like, literally screaming. Screaming at the sky, asking what God wants me to do, because Lord knows I haven't prayed. I have like a year sober. Like, I was barely praying, you know? And I'm screaming at the sky, and I'm asking for a sign to show me that God's real, because I deserve it, in my opinion, even though that's completely not true. But a shooting star does fall across the sky, and I'm still bawling my eyes out, but like, I'm speechless, and I'm like, okay, that's God. And even after that, I still had trouble with God. And I'm like, you literally just showed me like all the things I needed to see, but like, you know, my selfish mind is like, I still have trouble with God. And one thing I also need to mention is that, like, I can relate a lot to Alex's story, even sobriety. In sobriety, I didn't call it this, but I actually had a suicide attempt in sobriety. I put my car up to like 120 miles an hour and just let go of the wheel. And, like, I'm still here. I had to work with a therapist on like figuring out that was actually a suicide attempt, you know, because I was like, no, it was just like a mistake, you know. But yeah, I mean, sobriety's been tough, and I'm talking a lot about like the tough things that I've gone through in sobriety. I've had people die, all that stuff, but like, it's also been great. Like I mentioned in the beginning, like the relationships that I have today are unmatched. Like I can call people and like actually be honest with them, and like they show up for me and I show up for them. And like talking about living amends, this kid called me today and he's like, yeah, I have this assignment. I need to talk about like living amends. And like, could you give me your description of it? And I'm like, this is perfect. Cause like, I'm such a selfish individual sometimes, even now. In my head, I know the right answer, but I never want to do it. It's one of the things I had to call somebody on this week. Like my brother got hit by a car and broke his shoulder. And my parents were supposed to this week, and my parents were supposed to go to Turks and Caicos this weekend. And my mom was like, oh no, I'll just stay back if you can't. Like, my plans this weekend were to like go jet skiing and like go out to a steakhouse and like do all this fun stuff. And I'm like talking to my mom in my head, I'm like, God, I do not want to go take care of my brother on this weekend. Like, I'd rather go do all this fun stuff. And then like, I'm like, okay, I'll come over and do it. Don't worry about it. Just, I'll take care of it, you know? And even after that, I had to call somebody and be like, should I like call her back and be like, no, like, should I just like not do that? But I knew the right thing to do, right? And that's my living amends. Cause like, I remember after I got out of rehab, my mom told me, she's like, Marlon, that's the best I've slept in years because I knew you were all right, you know? And I forget those things so easily because my relationships today with my family are just absolutely pristine. Like my mom calls me and talks to me about all these things, talk to me about problems with my brothers. Oh, and my relationship with my brothers is absolutely amazing. Like, one's 6 years younger than me and one's 8 years younger than me. Like, I take them out. My dad called me the other day and it just, like, blew my mind. It, like, my heart just was so full. He called me and he's like, Marlon, your youngest brother, like, literally looks up to you. Like, he puts you on a pedestal. Like, he wants to be just like you are now. And, like, to think that's, like, the case, because, like, I'm an upstanding member of society, like, I show up when I'm supposed to. Like, I didn't want to be here. I was, like, I had, you know, it was my home group. I'm, like, I don't want to come here and speak. Like, I didn't want to do this at all, but I'm here. You know, there's so many things that, like, I just show up. And that's one thing, like, AA has taught me is, like, just to always suit up and show up, even when I don't want to, even when I do want to, you know, show up for friends. Like, I've had to, like, cancel plans to, like, go spend time at a hospital because, like, somebody's really struggling. You know, it's just, I'm not this person, you know? Like, I've never been this person. What taught me all these things was, like, you guys. And, like, standing up here and talking is, like, just crazy to me because, like, this group has kept me sober. It's taught me how to be, like, an adult. And I'm still not perfect at it. Like, I remember I was talking to Terry about, like, my budget. And he's like, well, you got to do it if you want to, like, actually. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't know. you know, like, I came in and I was 18 and I didn't know how to live. Like, I didn't know how to pay bills. I didn't know how to pay rent. I didn't know how to, like, show up to a job. Like, my only job was, like, I was, like, a busboy at, like, a restaurant, you know? And, like, I didn't know how to do any of those things. You guys taught me that through your actions and through what you did. And, again, I'm nowhere near perfect. There's a lot of things that I wouldn't change. But, like, if you take anything from my story, it's, like, I've done a lot of crazy things in AA and, like, continue to stay sober. But the only reason that is because I continue to get honest with my sponsor. Like, I called my sponsor the other day and I, like, told him something. And I was like, wait, hold up. I just lied to you. I need to back it up a little bit. And then so I told the truth, you know? And I keep showing up. I keep showing up to meetings. I keep showing up to my home group. That's something that I'm consistent about. I'm always here on Thursday nights. And I'm still sober, you know? And the steps are, I didn't really talk much about them, but that's like the program of AA, right? Like going through the steps, I remember when I first came in and I like was so sick. And like I just, every time I did a step, I'd feel like a little bit better. So I kept calling my sponsor and I just kept feeling a little bit better, a little bit better. And then I remember getting to like step 9 and having to make amends. And those amends were crazy. I remember sitting down with my mom, she still has this binder to this day, of like all the money that I owe her and my dad. And she's like, I also want to know everything. Like, tell me your story. And then I start telling her, and she's like, Marlon, no, stop. I don't want to hear this anymore. And it's crazy. You know, I'm really trying to think of, like, it's so crazy to me. And one thing that recently I've been thinking about a lot is God, right? My spirituality has shifted. And it talks about in the big book a lot about, like, how if we fail to enlarge our spiritual life, we're sure to drink. And it talks a lot about, like, how, like, if an alcoholic isn't happy in sobriety, he's sure to drink, right? And, like, spirituality truly does make me happy. Because, like, when I'm not praying and I'm not doing the right thing, like, I'm totally in my own will. And I do it so often. It's crazy. And then, like, I'm like, why am I doing this? And then I just start, like, doing the, like, praying and, like, trusting God again. And then things get better. And I'm like, why don't I just do this consistently? But it's because I'm an alcoholic and I'm extremely selfish. And I think I know everything. But I don't. And I have to tell myself that constantly. And yeah, outside of being an alcoholic, like I have some other issues, like it talks about it, like, and I seek outside help for that, you know? I go to therapy. I do things to better myself consistently. And the only reason I do these things to better myself consistently is because of AA. You know, like if I didn't have this baseline or foundation of my life, like I wouldn't be able to show up here. I wouldn't be able to show up for my family. I wouldn't be able to show up to the gym. I wouldn't be able to show up to my appointments, show up to work. Like there's so many material aspects that have come in my life in such a short amount of time. Like in 5 years, I've grown my life so much. But like the real important things to me is the fact that like even if all those things disappeared, I know I'd still have God and I know he'd still take care of me and I'd be okay. You know, and accepting that is like extremely hard, and it's been hard for me at certain points, but like the truth of the matter is like I have a higher power today that I can trust in and I know everything will be okay. And it's a crazy thought because when I try and rely on myself and I think like I'm the smartest and I'm this and I'm that, I always just end up falling a little short. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? Like, I did everything that I could. But the reality is, like, I wasn't trusting in something else to guide me to do the right thing. Because at my baser instincts, I'm a liar, a cheater, and a thief. That's what I am. And again, you guys taught me to not be that. And my higher power continues to carry me through. How much time do I have left, Jeff? 3 minutes. 3 minutes, all right. So one thing that I feel like I'd be remiss to mention is I was in like YPAW for a really long time. Like Alex talked about like being gung-ho about AA. For like the first 3.5, almost 4 years of my sobriety, I was like traveling all over the country, meeting a bunch of people and like going to all these conferences, being on all these committees, going to insane amounts of meetings, building a network around me. And like what I can say today is like that stuff saved my life. This group guided me to be an adult. But that stuff saved my life because I realized that there's like other young people in sobriety that like do things, you know, that have jobs, that grow their life, that go to school, that do all this stuff. And I built some of the best relationships in my life, you know? Like, I'm going up to New York next month, and I sent a text to one of my friends, and he was like, oh, I'm so excited to see you. Like, do you need to stay here? Like, what's up? Like, what do you need? And those were my relationships before. I have like a friend in almost every single state in the United States that I can call on, and it's a situation like that, you know? And AA gave that to me. AA has blessed me with like great friendships today and great relationships, and like the ability to show up and have others show up for me. Because AA's never not shown up for me, ever. Not a single time that I can remember that it just hasn't happened. Like, AA always shows up. And it's just mind-blowing to me. But like, doing all that stuff, throwing all these events, I got really angry, and I was really sick at points, and I like used the traditions as weapons and used my knowledge as a weapon. But like, I also gained a lot. I learned how to be a better person. I learned how to not do that. I learned how to like be somewhat humble, even though I'm an extremely egotistical person and most of the time really condescending and not humble at all. But I do my best to be better, you know? And I pray almost every day for God to remove my character defects, because like, that's what I need. But like, today I'm an upstanding member of society, you know? Like, I show up for people, I show up to work, even though I called out sick today. But I do show up for work pretty consistently. I mean, it happens, you know? I show up for work, I show up for the people that need me, and like, AA has taught me to be that person, and it's continued to exceed my life in ways that I never would have thought I'd wanted. And the last thing that I'll say before I shut up is, when I came in, like, I thought like a life beyond my wildest dreams was like a giant mansion with a bunch of like attractive women, sports cars, and like all that stuff, you know? Like, that's what I wanted. And then my friend last night, we were staying at the Hard Rock, and it's like 5 a.m. and he asked me, he's like, I just saw this on Instagram, Marlon. Would you rather have like $50 million, or would you rather be like, but have no family or friends? Or would you rather be like a middle class individual and have like a bunch of family and friends? And immediately I said, I'd rather be middle class and have a bunch of family and friends. If you asked me 5 years ago, it would have been the other answer. Because like, a life beyond my wildest dreams today is so much different than what it used to be. And I'm so happy that it is. Because the relationships I have with my family, the relationships I have with y'all, and God are just, it's not worth any amount of money to me. It's not. There's nothing that's worth more than that to me. Because like, my mom calling me and asking me like what she should do with my brother, or like calling me and asking me like these questions, or my dad calling me and like, that's priceless. Like, there's nothing that has a value. Like, there's no value to that. And God did that, and AA did that for me. So if you're thinking about staying sober, I hope you got something from my story, and that's all I got.